Guys, welcome back to Unleashed, and we're glad you are here. Today is going to be a really great day. It's always a great day. You know, we always think about all these have-tos that we have to get done. I got to do this. I got to do that. But man, for me, I think so many days when I start feeling like that, I have to remind myself, no, it's I get to. What an honor and a privilege it is to be able to serve God and to be in this world that He made, that we get to enjoy. And we're going to hear a lot about that today. It's going to be fun. Eric, it's been a while, man. I've been home doing some podcasts, and it's good seeing you.
Yeah, man.
Well, what's new with the bike riding? Anything?
I put in like 12 miles Saturday. That's been about it on the bike riding front. Sighted in my other rifle this week, but
it's been hot.
I know.
And no rain. I mean, my yard right now is terrible. I've been putting a sprinkler out, and I still have big dead patches of grass. And
I'm mowing it tall now to, you know, so it stays healthy.
Yeah, my acorn trees on the side yard, they're just busting, it seems. I mean, they're pretty bold, but yeah. Well, man, guys, welcome back. I wish this was like a live audience or a retreat, you know, so when we get done with stuff, we could ask questions of each other. We could talk about what's happening in our lives. And so last week, Don Higgins was going to be on, and I screwed up and I forgot to give the time difference. You know, he's in Illinois, I'm in Indiana, and I wish they would do away with this thing. I get tired of that time thing. But so we had left, you know, the office here, and then Don goes, hey, I'm here. And I'm like, oh, I messed up. I forgot about the hour time difference. Kind of bummed. Eric was on his way back. He lives about 40 minutes away, and I get home. And my youngest goes, would you get me something from McDonald's? Well, McDonald's is like a mile down the road. So I ran down and got her something and came home, and I'm standing in the kitchen. Stacy's not back home yet because she's thinking I'm doing the podcast. Perfect time for her to go out and, you know, do whatever she wants to get done. And as I'm standing in the kitchen, now you remember back from my story. Maybe some of you don't remember this. You haven't been listening long enough. But in one of my earlier podcasts, I talked about how I was out hunting in Colorado. And I was in the dark heading to a stand that I had set up to elk hunt that day, and God changed my path three times. He told me to go a different way, which took me a lot longer to get there, which, as far as I really can tell, it was something that was probably a lifesaver, because I ended up getting charged by a bear when I get to the blind. As I'm getting there, he had been tearing it apart. And luckily, I did have a firearm with me as well as my bow, and dispatched of the bear. And you can go back to one of the earlier episodes. Eric, I can't remember which episode that was. It was it Lack of Purpose? I think it would have been under the Big Five Man Killers. So if you go back to maybe like episode 5, 6, somewhere around there, you'll find it. Powerful story. But I'm standing in the kitchen, and I'm hearing the same voice that on that hunt was saying to me, I want you to go this way. And I fought with God. Every time in the dark when he was trying to get me to go a different direction, he would come back at the very end, and he would say to me, do you trust me? Now, how do I know that? Well, I don't know how to explain it. If you're a believer, you know what I'm talking about. When we have God's Spirit in us and He speaks to us, we hear His voice. I don't know how to explain that. But we know His Word. We know that through prayer how He communicates with us. And I think He absolutely communicates with us individually, because we are individuals that He created. And it's like, I know my Father's voice because I take time, you know, listening to Him and watching how He moves. So I'm in the kitchen, and I hear this voice, Brent, I want you to go upstairs in your home studio, not here at the studio where we usually record. And he said, I want you to go, I want you to do a podcast. Now, I had everything, you know, ready to kind of, you know, talk to Don and talk about whitetails and patriotism and God and family and all this great stuff like we have before. And I said, God, I don't have anything ready outside of that. And he said, I'm not asking you to go get anything ready. I'm asking you, are you willing to be obedient and go do what I'm calling you to do? And then he said, right now. I'm like, why right now? And he said to me, this is time sensitive. I want you to go upstairs, shut the door, get your microphone on, get your computer up. It's only because I was using the camera out of that last week. And here we go. I went, okay. Inside, you know, of course, I'm feeling like, man, you know, I don't have all my notes prepared. I can't just fly through a really cool story and all this stuff. And God wasn't asking me to have a really cool story. He wasn't asking me to tie up everything with a bow at the very end of this podcast. He said, just, are you willing to be obedient? I sat down. If you listened last week, it was short. It was like 16 minutes. And I started off and I said, guys, I'm not starting off with the music and all that, you know, radio voice kind of stuff this week. I don't know why, but God has told me to come and do this. And really, I was waiting on God. What do you want me to say? Because I had no clue at this point. And as I just trusted in him, he began to talk about, and through his spirit saying to me, there's somebody out there right now that is, they're in a bad place. Now, a lot of us are in bad places. I know that. I get that. And he said, but there's someone out there that's looking to take their life. But he kept saying, this is time sensitive. And I thought, well, I'll get this done. I'll edit it in the morning. He goes, no, I want you to record this now, and I want you to edit it now, and I want you to put it out now. Well, that was like, wow. And I felt it. And at that moment, when you know the God of the universe is speaking to you, you don't say no. It's an honor. So I got the thing done, and I was talking about, there's somebody out there. And I said to my listeners, we're going to pray for you right now. I don't know why God has moved next week's podcast or this week's to next week and all this stuff. But I said, but if you're listening, I want you to know you're not alone. Our Heavenly Father cares for you. He has an amazing plan for your life. And I don't even remember everything I said because it wasn't scripted. So the next 2 days, I had a few guys, you know, reach out to me. I said, reach out to me through, you know, the email at the unleashed.men site. A few guys reached out and they said, you know, it could have been me. I've really been struggling. I'd appreciate your prayers. And I responded back. But I think it was Friday. You know, this came out Monday night. I get this very specific email, and he said to me, it's okay to share some of this. So his name was Randall. I'm not going to say where he was from. But he had never seen this podcast, ever. He'd never heard of it. And somehow it popped up in his feed. And if you've ever been watching, like with today's, you know, guest, the Chasing Giants podcast, you know, sometimes when the podcast is over, you know, YouTube will kind of do a commercial, and then it'll just jump to whatever is next in line. Well, I think that's what must have happened, or God just popped it up in front of him. But he said, as I was listening to that podcast, I was writing my suicide note. No kidding. That's exactly what he was telling me. He had been through a recent divorce, a lot of pain. He was having some really serious medical issues that were causing him a lot of pain. And he was done. And he was constructing this thing about what he was going to be doing with his businesses and passing them over to somebody else. He was checking out. You know, when God moves like that, it increases my faith, not even tenfold. I mean, a millionfold. When you see our Heavenly Father and he's calling us to do something. So today, as we kind of move into this, as we get toward the end of the podcast, we're going to bring it back around and we're going to talk about, you know, how do I then get plugged in, maybe with a group of guys that are wanting to seek God and know God, that love adventure like we do. Maybe it's bow hunting, whatever that thing is. But we have a great special thing we're going to tell you about at the end of this podcast, an opportunity for you guys. It's coming up in just a little over a week and a half, so we'll tell you a little bit more. So, well, man, today we've got Don Higgins, and Don, it's good to have you back, buddy.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Brent.
Did you know that the podcast that you and I did, I think it was like, what was it called? Like something, God, Family, and Patriotism or something. That's still the second most viewed podcast that we put out. So no question, you have a lot of guys that really respect and trust you. And while I'm remembering it too, Don Higgins' website, for those of you that maybe you're listening in for the first time or you want to know where his website is, we'll put that up on the screen for you so you've got that. And the pod, I said before the camera came on, I said, Don, I said, your podcast is bad for me because I'll be up, I'm trying to work on a new book right now. And I'll get in the middle of it, and I'll have Chasing Giants on, you know, learning what's happening with the whitetail harvest, what they're expecting this year, or food plots or cameras or whatever. And I find myself kind of getting distracted. But that's because it's tapping into my passions. And that's exactly this website, you know, that they have with Chasing Giants. They have really grown this thing. And we were just talking before we came on, and he said, man, it's just especially like in the last even month, it has just even increased that much more. So, Don, we first met, and I think I've explained this before. You had written the book, Hunting Whitetails in the Real World? What was it?
Hunting Trophy Whitetails in the Real World.
That was it. And I was sitting in a parking lot somewhere and going, man, this guy is, he knows his stuff. He explains everything in such a way for me as a whitetail hunter. It was almost like, here's what you need to do. And I was laughing at you and Terry a couple weeks ago. You were talking about these young pups.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'll bet. And it's, you get these young guys, right? And they see something on YouTube and they're now the expert, you know, and they go out and try to mimic something and it doesn't work for them. We'll talk more about that stuff. But Don is someone that you absolutely want to listen to, especially if you're a bow hunter and you love hunting whitetails like I do. That's, for me, there's nothing like hunting a whitetail. And I've had a chance to hunt all over the world. So anyhow, let's kind of get into this thing. And so you had said something recently on one of the podcasts, maybe 3 weeks ago, about it being an early fall.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Our leaves started turning red here in some places several weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? And like for the bow hunter, when it could be anything from trail camera placement to entrance and exit, you know, into the woods or.
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is what it does not mean. It does not mean that the rut is going to be early.
Right.
The rut is triggered by photoperiodism or the daylight hours. You know, deer have a pineal gland in the corner of their eye that registers daylight. And that's what triggers a doe to come into estrus. So nobody needs to get the idea that we're going to have an early rut. What we probably are going to have, at least it appears, is some earlier colder weather. There should be some cold fronts in October, more typical of November. And those cold fronts spur deer activity. And I expect some fantastic hunting in October this fall. Just based on the way everything's setting up now.
Well, and I know that from hearing you before, you're not usually an early October, at least mornings, guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely don't hunt October mornings unless it's a cold front.
Yeah.
I think that's a great way to educate the deer to your stand locations and the fact that you're after them. An educated deer is 5 times harder to kill than one that's just going about his business. I mean, especially mature buck, you know, he's pretty wary and pretty slick as it is. And when you tip him off that he's being hunted, he just becomes way harder to kill. And hunting October mornings is a good way to tip those bucks off when the odds are way more in their favor than they are yours. So I've, for decades now, I've avoided October mornings. There was a period of, I don't know, probably 10, 15, 20 years where I did not hunt a single October morning. I would hunt every evening I could, but I did not hunt a single morning. But in the last few years, I've recognized that those cold fronts, especially the last third of October, say after the 20th of October, you get a cold front, you need to be in the woods, you know, morning and evening. So that's been my approach here in recent years. And it just goes to show that I'm still learning, just like everybody else. I'm trying to perfect my craft as much as anyone else. And I'm willing to change my mind when, you know, I see that I need to.
How much do you think this early fall is going to change, you know, harvest this year? And when they're taking down the cornfields and.
Well, I'm not sure it's going to change the harvest in my area so much. And the reason for it is, you know, we had a mild winter last spring or last winter. Then we had an early spring. But, you know, we only got a couple of days early for the farmers in my area to plant. And then we went into a rainy period. And kept them out of the fields for well over a month. So the crops were not planted for the most part, with the exception of a couple of days. For the most part, the crops were not planted any earlier than they typically are. So the harvest is not going to be early. I just think the weather pattern is going to be early. And, you know, kind of to build on that just a little bit, the bucks shed their velvet a little bit early this year. Seen the earliest velvet shedding I've ever seen. Had lots of pictures sent to me by others of bucks in hard horn in mid-August even. So, you know, everything looks to be about 2 weeks ahead of schedule, but the harvest, at least in my area, the harvest is not going to be ahead of schedule and the rut is not going to be ahead of schedule, but the weather, it definitely looks like it's going to be.
Does the, you know, when they're shedding early like that, do you find that the spring sheds, does that back that up and might make it any earlier at all? Is there any difference or does it normally go back about the same time?
Well, to be honest, this is the earliest I've ever seen them shed velvet. Before this year, I had one photo of one buck about 20 years ago that had shed on August 29th. this year, by August 29th, on my cameras, I think I had 3 or 4 bucks that had shed. And I had just gobs of photos from others of bucks that they seen in hard horn. And some of them were like mid-August, so a full couple of weeks ahead of that. But then there was other bucks that seemed to be following the traditional pattern of shedding that first week or so of September. It's just hard to pinpoint it, but on average, they definitely shed velvet earlier this fall than they typically do.
I found a set of sheds. This would have been probably about 7 years ago on December 13th. I was blown away. I had never seen them shed that early. And I was hunting this buck, and it was actually a 13-point. Kind of funny, that's how I remembered that. But I'm literally on the way to the stand. It was an afternoon, and I was going to get in there. You know, it was a cold day, later season, and I had some brassica and stuff out there. And as I'm walking down to my stand, there's this set of sheds, one over here. I look over, and there's the other one. That was the target buck that I was looking at. I went, what in the world? I mean, how early have you seen them actually shed their antlers before?
Well, I've seen them shed in December several times, but almost always it's stress of some sort, an injury to the deer, really bad weather. You know, I remember one year there was a bad ice storm where the ice stayed on the vegetation for like over a week, really thick ice where, you know, even standing soybeans had such a layer of ice on them that the deer couldn't eat them. And when that happened that year, in 1 week period, the majority of the bucks dropped their antlers. So typically that shedding date is going to be affected by stress on the deer as much as anything.
I remember Dr. Dave Samuel, we were talking one time about the rut, and you were saying, you know, photoperiodism is when it's going to come in. And he said it can move one way a few days or the other, but it's pretty much going to be the same time. And he said, usually, if it moves a little bit early, he was talking about the acorn crop. And he said, because the healthier the deer is, the healthier their cycle is. And he said, because sometimes when you were saying about stress on deer, how it can affect it, and I don't know if you've ever, you know, heard that before. Dr. Dave was, what was the show he had years ago? Was it called Knowing Deer, I think was the name of it. Do you know Dave or not? I didn't know if you were.
I've communicated with him some. I remember his stuff in Bowhunter magazine back in the day, but very knowledgeable.
Yeah, he's getting up there. He's getting up there. I was there when he and Chuck Adams were inducted into the Bow Hunting Hall of Fame at that ceremony at the ATA one night. And wow, just the amount of knowledge, just to be around all you guys. I have learned so much. And that's what I think guys love, because they're working their 9 to 5. You know, they don't have a chance to get out and do a lot of the different things. And to be able to lean into some guys like you. You said something, was it like last week's podcast or 2 weeks ago, about do deer really react, you know, to our trail cams? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I used to have one of those 360s that would spin, you know, I had it out in the middle of a field, and that one I went, yeah, I'm not real comfortable with that. It was just too much movement. But I have a theory, and I don't have my light with me, but I was going to see if you've ever checked on this. So, you know, one of my sponsors for years made a thing called UV Killer, and you've probably heard of it before, you know, it gets the UV out of your garment and stuff. And I'm 20 years, 22 years now I've worked with them. But we were at a show, I think it was Hershey, the Hershey show. And we have a little UV light. It's like a little black light. And we were walking around checking camo. You know, you don't want the people to see you're checking their stuff out to see if it's UV hot or not. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, deer lack a UV filter in their eyes. And so the glow that comes off the dyes and brighteners within camouflage, they see as a blue glow. So deer don't see blaze orange. They see in two colors. They see in blue and they see in yellow. So it's a shade of that. And interestingly enough, the only thing that's blue in the wilds for them are things like poisonous snakes, scorpions, poisonous mushrooms, the sky, and UV dyes and brighteners. So it's interesting that they know what's bad for them in the whitetail woods. And so that's why I was just thinking about this, because of the blue glow. I was walking around looking at camo, and I came across, I'm not going to mention the bow manufacturer, but I was looking at their risers and their limbs. Years ago, at the ATA, we had a big black tent. And I think, Don, maybe that's kind of when you and I first met. We might have still been having that black tent. We had a big black light in there, if you remember that. But camo companies would come in, they'd check their camo to see if it was glowing at all, if there was any dyes or brighteners that happened in the factory, like in China or something, because we could help them with that problem. Well, Bear brought in some of their bows because they were kind of worried. He said, man, we want to check our bows. We checked them. They were great. Another bow manufacturer came in, and I said, would you mind if we checked your bow? And he came in, and he checked it, and it looked like a big glowing blue popsicle. I mean, it was bad. And he said, we thought we had a problem because we put like this automotive finish on it. He said, can you cover that up? I said, no, you can't cover that up. It's in it now. I'm wondering if some of those cell cameras have the same kind of a finish that might glow blue under the black light, which, again, not having a UV filter, they see those wavelengths.
Well, I don't have the answer, obviously. But in my experience, it is much easier for me to get a picture of a mature buck on a non-cell camera than a cell camera. And I'm talking not just this season. I'm talking over a number of years that I've run these cameras. And I think I'm pretty good at getting a buck's photo with a non-cell camera. Yeah, if there's a good buck in an area, you know, I'm not just talking on one camera. I may bring four or five cameras into his area, but I will get his picture at some point. With a cell camera, it is way tougher. I wouldn't put money on me versus the deer just getting his picture with a cell camera. It's that much tougher. And I'm not saying what it is. I mean, I don't know what it is. I know after that podcast, we had all kinds of, actually about over 75% of the people agreed, but they had the same, you know, observation that I'd made. But there was others that made assumptions that I was saying that they were picking up radio signals or whatever. I don't know what it is how the deer are doing it, but something is going on with those cell cameras that mature bucks especially are way better at picking them up. And that doesn't mean they never pick up a non-cell camera. I mean, I've had them spot them and spook and you never get their picture again as well. But at least you got that first picture. With cell cameras, you don't even get that first picture.
I Googled it, and probably almost half your listeners, I bet, did after you were done. You know, can they pick up these radio waves or cell signals? And there was no conclusive anything about it. And I got to thinking, I don't want to mention it on here, but if you can, like, just message me, like, the different cameras you're using that do have the cell signal, I'm going to go down, and I'm going to take, I have a little black light that I carry around, and I'll go down and check the finish on that. And see if that's possible, that it could be something connected with some of that. I mean, it's worth experimenting because it doesn't make sense. And I've had the same issue before. So, yeah.
Well, I'm using the same brand of cell versus non-cell, and they're using the same case on both. So I'm not sure that, but I would be interested to see if that case glows.
Because
it totally makes sense that, I mean, I've got all kinds of pictures where I've hung a camera on a tree and another camera on that camera to see the deer's reaction. And I've got countless pictures of deer that obviously see that camera. And the camera that I've got on the tree is not even on. It's just a box on that doesn't even work. You know, it's an old camera just to see deer's reaction to that camera. And they absolutely do react to it.
One of my thoughts was if it does glow blue, I think one of the solutions would be just go get some, so like they make camo moleskin and you can just get that moleskin and put it over top of it because it won't hold the UV and it's not going to be UV hot. A thought. Oh gosh, let's see. Oh, I was thinking about this, you know, with the deer, because one of my buddies who passed away a few years ago that had Whitetail University, Wade Nolan, we were talking about, no, this is the deer's bedroom. Because you get a lot of questions. Guys say, do you ever hunt the bedding areas? Well, I had one guy one night go, well, when the rut's here, I absolutely hunt the bedding area. I put right in the middle of it because that's where the bucks are going to be running does in and out all day. And I'm like going, I wouldn't touch it. But that was his opinion. I don't know if it ever worked for him. It didn't work for me. You know, I might try to get close to the edge of a bedding area, you know, to try to get them coming in and out of there, kicking those does in and out. But the cameras, you know, We talk a lot about, you know, when we're doing seminars about making sure you're not being silhouetted, the way you sit in your tree stand, that your back is up, you know, close to the tree, or, you know, making sure you got good back cover, all that stuff. But being that this is their bedroom, there was a company, and I'm trying to spy something, Spy Point or Spy High or something. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. They make an attachment for your cell cameras so you can get them up high. They make an extension pole like you would have with your, you know, your saw. and it has a little drill or something at the bottom. I mean, you hold it up there, it'll put the thing in there, and all you do is clip your camera on, and you can tilt it in the angle you want it. Might be an option. Just thinking about that.
Yeah, I remember the product you're talking about. I don't remember who made it, but I typically carry a couple of screw-in tree steps with me so I can get my cameras up, you know, 8-10 feet off the ground. And the other thing is I don't want that camera pointing down the trail, but, you know, perpendicular to the trail. So it's off to the side, catching the deer passing by instead of coming at it or going away from it.
And when do you make the shift?
Definitely helped.
When do you make the shift between your, you know, your summer setups and your fall with your cameras?
Labor Day weekend. I like to have that camera in the fall range before the bucks get there. And each buck is a little bit different in his patterns. And some of them don't show up to in their fall range until mid-October. And, you know, if they show up mid-October and your hunting season opens October 1st, if you hunt the first 2 weeks, all you're doing is educating all the does and everything else, burning out your stands before the buck has ever showed up, because those bucks will follow an annual pattern. If he shows up in mid-October, he's going to do that year after year. And so the bucks that I'm hunting, I'm putting together annual history and data on those deer years before I actually target those animals. So I know when he's going to show up. I know when I have to go in and hunt him. And I'm not burning out the property or the stand location ahead of time.
So what was I going to ask? There was two things in my mind. I wanted to ask you something. Oh, a deer's range. Like when a buck is born on a property, you know, we've all had cell camera pictures of bucks that we've never seen before during the rut. They're coming from, you know, who knows, 1, 2, 3 miles away and going through stuff. What is a buck's normal range from where he is born? And how much will he actually venture out from that?
Well, so where they're born is often not where they're going to end up. So Mother Nature's got a way of preventing inbreeding. The young males in every species typically relocate away from their birth area. So if you ever hear of a bear or a mountain lion seen someplace where they typically don't live, say you've seen a bear in central Indiana, it's almost always going to be a young male. It's a young male that's trying to relocate. So what happens with the whitetail is in the spring, you know, the fawns from last year are still with the mother. They spend the whole winter with the mother. They go into spring, and about the time she gets ready to have her next set of fawns, she'll run off her buck fawns from the previous year, and she'll tolerate her doe fawns, and they will remain in that same area, but she will run off her buck fawns. And research has shown that in farm country, like here in the Midwest, typically those yearling bucks are going to relocate between 5 and 20 miles from where they was born, and they will set up home there. In more heavily wooded areas, such as say the upper Midwest, you know, northern Wisconsin, Minnesota, things like that, it won't be quite as far. But in more open regions, say in the plain states, it could be over 100 miles. And this has all been proven with radio collars and such. But the really interesting thing about this is so in the spring, when the mother runs off her previous year's male offspring, if that doe happens to get killed, whether hit on the car or shot by a hunter or whatever, she's not there to run off her offspring. 90% of the time, they're going to remain right where they was born and not go searching for a new home range. Huh.
So what about one of the problems we're starting to see pop up, and I heard you mention it in today's podcast that you put out. By the way, I hope Terry gets feeling better. He didn't sound like he was feeling real good when you guys did that.
I heard from him today. I'm pretty sure he's got COVID. He's got COVID. So.
I messaged him real quick this morning, and I said, man, I said, way to push through. You know, I know that had to be tough. I could just see you weren't feeling good, but you did it anyhow. But, man, my neighbor's got COVID right now, and he's an elderly. He's got dementia. It's just kind of tough. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had it a couple of times. It's no fun, that's for sure.
Yeah, you had it when you shot, was it Mel?
Yeah, Mel.
Yeah, I remember that. And you went back and took a nap.
I did, a two-hour nap before I went and recovered.
And what did that deer score?
He grossed 221.
Yeah, can you believe this? He goes back and takes a nap before he ever goes after it. Because you were getting was it your, who was it you took with you? Was it not grandsons, was it?
Yeah, it was my grandson. So yeah. My grandsons lived about an hour and a half or so away, and I was waiting on them to come and go with me to find the deer. And so it wasn't, it was a combination of COVID and waiting on the grandsons that made me go take a nap.
It just that you were out there to begin with, but obviously you knew that deer was in the area. But EHD, you just mentioned that today. That's where I was kind of head with this. You're starting to see it kind of pop up. It's ugly head here. So, talk about that a little bit. Cause I think a lot of, we had that here. What year was that? 2013, 14?
2012 was the worst outbreak in the Midwest. And then there was more in 2013, and every year there's pockets, usually just isolated pockets of an outbreak, but, 2012 was the worst, and this year is shaping up to be really bad as well. Every day that goes by, I'm hearing of more outbreaks, and Indiana's been hit hard. It's in Illinois now, just all across the state.
And guys, wherever you're at, you know, if you want to reach out to, I'm sure Don, you can reach out. He's got contact on his website that we put up earlier. And if you want to reach out to mine too at unleash.men, and just kind of let us know what you're seeing, you know, stuff like that. We'll pass that information on. I think I found, was it 4 deer back that year? And I was only hunting an area. It was about 43 acres. And I found those deer. And again, you know, that, how do you say it? Mesozoic hemorrhaging disease. Is that how you pronounce it?
Epizootic.
Yeah, there you go. Leave it to him. And what is, is it like a gnat that gets up in the nose?
Well, it's actually a virus, but the virus is spread by a midge gnat. A tiny midge gnat gets in the deer's nasal cavity and bites the deer and infects them. And that's how it spread.
There's a little like a blowfly up in Alaska. When I would see, like, you'd see a solo caribou and he's not being chased by a brown bear or a wolf, and he would be running back and forth and back and forth. They go crazy. They get that thing up in there and they just go nuts. Mm-hmm. Pretty crazy. Let's see here. Let me kind of just pull up a couple of things here. You know, thinking about, you know, what we were talking about, how the fall patterns, you know, with the early fall, does it really change their movement much? Like, that's why I asked the question about the corn early, because so many guys are like, if they're hunting an area where there's cornfields adjacent to them and they don't see much buck activity until that corn goes down. And so that was kind of the reasons why I was asking, will that change, you know, by a week or so, that harvesting date whatsoever?
Well, I can't speak for the entire country, but in my area, it's not going to change when that corn comes out. It's not going to be an early harvest. If it was an early harvest, they'd already be all over it. And there's been very limited harvest in my area. But I expect here in the next week or so, it's really going to pick up. And every farmer is going to be taking part in the harvest. But
the beans are tall.
Changing there.
I was driving the other day to Muncie, Indiana. It's about a 25-minute drive. And I was going by this bean field, and all of a sudden, I see this rack pop right up. Never saw the deer. All I could see was his rack sticking up. I mean, they were probably, I don't know, 3 feet tall. And those deer, man, they just disappear.
They like to bed in bean fields, believe it or not. I mean, most people probably don't realize that. But I had a gentleman here doing a drone survey this summer with a thermal imaging drone. And pretty interesting. He can locate those deer with the thermal. Then he turns the thermal off and zooms in on them. And we've seen a lot of bucks bedded in soybean fields.
Now, out in Illinois, you have a lot of those, like those drainage ditches out in the middle, like of the field and stuff. And I've walked right up going across and had one bedded right there, about step on them.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah,
those drainage ditches are great places to find the giants.
Okay, so before I forget this, I got to ask you. You mentioned something on one of your podcasts, and I believe it was and I love doing game dinners, and there's always a lot of the Amish community because a lot of them love to hunt. And I think it might have been someone from the Amish community that had built a tunnel.
Yeah.
How long was this thing?
Probably at least 100 yards. It went into a hillside. Actually, the guy's food plot was over the top of the tunnel. The tunnel went across his food plot underground and then popped up in a blind on the other side of the food plot. And it was.
And you physically saw it?
I was absolutely. I was on the property doing a consulting visit for that landowner, and I think that I go to a lot of effort for some of my tree stands and blind locations, but I have never went to the trouble this guy did.
That's actually really genius.
Yeah. Yeah. And take it even other to another level. So he started at the road and he dug a ditch that he walks in to the tunnel. And that when he's walking in that ditch, all that's sticking up above the ground level is his shoulders and his head. So he's way down into the vegetation. You know, you don't even see him walking the ditch. And then he goes from the ditch into the tunnel and then makes a 90 degree turn and goes straight up into the blind where he's got a ladder within that tunnel that he climbs up through the tunnel and pops out in his blind. But he also has, from his blind, he's got a 2-inch PVC pipe that comes down and it runs alongside the tunnel pipe and it runs all the way back out to the road. And then there at the road, he's got a little shack looks about like an outhouse really. And he's got a solar charger on the roof of that little shack. And inside he's got an exhaust fan. So when he goes hunting, he starts there, he turns the exhaust fan on and it pulls the air out of the blind all the way back to the road where he enters the property. And he'll crack a window and it'll pull air in that right. cracked window down that pipe, takes his scent all the way back to the road. And I have never seen anyone even come close to going to that much effort for one blind.
When you were talking about that little PVC pipe, I thought it was going to be, he was going to pee down it.
Yeah.
That's what I figured. No, you're, and it's going to go down into the dirt. So how much have you tested like human scent, like in scrapes? I mean, when I was with Whitetail University, we tried different scents. We put them even like WD-40 to see what kind of an effect, if it would stop them from coming, if they were curious, just different things. Like guys, you know, that are peeing off their stand. I know a lot of guys that would go, you know, yeah, I take a Gatorade bottle with me or whatever, but there's no way I'm going to be going off my stand. And Wade was one of these guys. He goes, we've tested everything. It really doesn't affect him much. Where do you kind of stand with that?
Well, in my younger days, I did everything possible for scent control. I took the chlorophyll tablets.
Oh, yeah.
I had the scent control clothing. I would, you know, strip down at my truck and change my clothes that were stored in a plastic container. I'd keep my clothes washed, you know, after a few hunts, it was time to wash them again. And I carried a bottle to pee in, the whole works. And one day, and the crazy thing is I was still being scented. I was still having deer blow at me. And so one day I'm sitting there and I'm looking at that pee bottle and I'm thinking to myself, this thing has got to stink. It's got to stink. And I just threw it away. That was the first thing I eliminated from my scent control regimen. And I don't know, one or two hunts later, I was in my stand as a morning hunt. I can still to this day, I can take you to the very tree where it happened. And I had to pee. So I just peed out of the stand. And it literally was like 15 minutes later, a 2-year-old 8-point buck comes along, smells my pee on the ground, and starts eating the grass.
And I'm not eating that deer.
Ever since. Yeah. Well, I've been peeing out of my stand ever since. And it was almost like a God moment. Like God was saying, you don't, here, I'm going to prove to you, you don't need to be peeing in no bottle.
You know, you'll go ahead, finish it. I was going to.
I just have learned that, and maybe I stink more than most people. I don't know, but I've learned to play the wind. And if you've got the wind, you could have worked in a hog barn for a week and never taken a shower. If you've got the wind, the deer's not smelling you.
And I don't know.
Just perfected that.
I think those tablets that we used to take, I think there was a company called Nullo.
Yep.
Isn't that it?
Well, and Scent Shield, there was a company called Scent Shield that had them too. And I really liked theirs the best. They had alfalfa in them too. And, It worked. There's no doubt it
yeah.
worked.
But you had to start taking them a little ways before, you know, and right. me too with the scent stuff, you know, when I'm showering, probably about at least a week, maybe sometimes a little bit more than that, 10 days, you know, I stop using any kind of colognes, any kind of, you know, normal shampoos, and I'll use something. It's an antimicrobial. It has no scent, you know, and, you know, here's something too is, again, I guess we all learn from everybody. And because of some of the guys that I work with, Wade was a whitetail biologist, and he said, you got to understand, every 28 days, you're literally, your cells are respiring, your skin cells, you're losing those, and they have their specific human scent. And he said, you know, we tried all kinds. And this is one of the things that drives me nuts. When I go to some of these shows, you get all these cover scents. And sorry, I'm kind of like you when it comes to some of this stuff. There's some things that are just smoke and mirrors. If when you understand, like, a deer's got, what is it, like 290 million scent receptors? And like a bloodhound or something has got like 220. And as humans, we got like 5 million. So when we think about, like, with a whitetail, what's he actually smelling? Well, every 28 days, you're losing a layer of skin. And so those dying or dead skin cells carry your specific body odor. He said, so every time when you're going to be showering during season, he says, you can go out and get like these exfoliation gloves. It kind of looks like the old Michael Jackson, you know, that kind of a glove. And scrub your skin as hard as you can to get all those dead and dying skin cells that are carrying your odor because they're dying. Get them off of there. And I'll tell you what, when I started really paying, because again, you're never going to, what's the only thing a deer can't smell? Nothing. They're going to, if they pick you up, but here's the one difference that I found. And again, this is my personal experience. I'm not saying this is a scientific study, but when I would really take care of that kind of stuff, you know, again, washing your clothes and something that's going to kill the human scent and bacteria, scrubbing my skin cells off. And whether you do this or not, whether you spray down, I'm not going to go into a commercial here, but there are some things that what those products do is they cover up the scent of those dead and dying skin cells that you have on there. So it's not going to totally eliminate it. But when you think about a deer smelling, you know, 290 million with the scent receptors, and we've got 5, we can't smell like they do. But when you scrub everything off as well as you can, and you, like I said, where it would be a cover, not I want to say a cover scent, I don't want to go that route at all. But when you spray something to destroy or cover up that scent that you have, my opinion from what my experience has been, it takes me a little bit longer to get busted, if I'm going to get busted, if I've played the wind wrong, I get a swirling wind or something, because now the particles that are drifting on the wind aren't as high as what they were. I think, you know, some of those things out there like ozonics, I think some of those things are created to do that. Personally, I can't see how when you're outdoors and you have something sitting there, how it can cover every one of them up. I don't. Is there some benefit to it? There probably is. I know guys that hunt like inside of blinds, but again, you know, when they first came out with these, they said, you know, breathing that stuff very long, isn't that good for your lungs? So, but, oh, go ahead.
I can even throw another wrinkle into the whole scent thing is I believe the deer on my farm know my specific odor versus another person. And the reason I think that is because if I'm hunting on my property, and a deer gets down, I'm talking does, I'm not talking about a mature buck, but you know, a doe, she's on top of things too. She's a survival expert. She's got to keep those fawns alive. But if I'll get a doe downwind of me and she smells me, you know, her reaction is not like it would be if I was on another property. She will flare her tail, maybe trot back into the cover where she came from, but she's not blowing and snorting and carrying on for 30 minutes telling the whole world that she's detected something. She obviously has smelled me and she's obviously concerned and she trots back into the cover. But if I have a cameraman with me and that we get smelled, it's a totally different ball game. She's snorting and blowing and she's telling the whole world that there's something over here that's not good.
I've got a squirrel in my front yard. There's tons of squirrels because of the nut trees we've got. But there's one a few years ago that I made friends with and I was feeding him peanuts and I got him to come up and eat out of my hand. And when I come out, he knows me. He's used to me. He knows my sound of my voice. He knows my, like, maybe my patterns, when I'm going to be coming out during the day. And he'll look up and then he'll go right back and he'll be 6 feet away. He doesn't care. The other ones are gone. But I fed him. I mean, my dog, same way. When the dog knows you've got food, you're their best friend.
Yep.
But yeah. And here's a really amazing thing. Back to the scent thing we were talking about is, you know, guys, and this is where I was headed with that, with these cover scents, that I have a pet peeve with this, is, you know, whether you've got a skunk scent, raccoon, fox, acorn, whatever scent, smoke from a, you know, your wood burner, whatever you say works for you. Here's my problem with that stuff. So they can smell like 6 different things at one time. You and I walk into grandma's house at Thanksgiving, and it smells like Thanksgiving, right? We go, wow, I can't wait to eat. But if a whitetail could talk and he walked in there, he'd go, I smell pumpkin pie. I smell turkey. I smell dressing. I smell cranberry sauce. I smell green bean casserole, because they can differentiate all these other things. So if what really spooks them is human scent, like we just talked about. Well, raccoon urine, so what? There's raccoons everywhere. It doesn't matter. It's your human respiring skin cells that is a warning to them, this shouldn't be here. So, I don't know. It's my two cents.
I think most of those products, they probably smell like whatever they're supposed to smell like, but are they really covering up the human scent? I think that's the big question, and I think for the most part, they're not. And, you know, it may smell like a human's carrying around a bucket of acorns or whatever.
Right.
It's not. It's a mixture of the two. I had one guy describe it, you know, somebody's cooking pea soup and you smell pea soup, but a deer would smell the peas, the carrots, the onions, whatever else. He smells each of those individual odors where we just smell the blend or whatever.
And I
don't think that a cover scent is going to, for the most part, is going to cover human odor. It's just going to mix with it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, someone's putting it on their boots walking in. But again, if you have any skin cells or anything on the bottom of that boot, because you've worn them in your truck on the way there, like we know, like pumping gas. But like you were saying, sometimes those smells aren't necessarily a warning to a deer. It can be a curious, or, I'm not real happy about that smell. But man, human skin cells, that's a totally different animal. I spray down, again, play the wind 100% of the time. But one of the things that hopefully will at least knock some of the power of my scent down is I spray down with an oxidizer on my skin. And I do this as soon as I get out of the shower, because what an oxidizer does, if you remember from science class, it turns your skin cells into salt, and salt has no aroma. And so that's what I try to do, is I spray down, let it dry, spray my equipment. And again, I don't get busted very often, but I think it's just because I pay attention to my entrance and exit to the woods, for one thing, my line of sight. And I think for a lot of guys out there, it's not that they're not playing the wind right. They're going, man, I've set my stand up right. I'm getting busted. Well, here's a question I'd love to ask some of you guys. How many of you have ever had a maternal doe? I mean, she's one of the toughest things to fool. And all of a sudden, she's walking up, and she's under your stand, and she goes. And I said, how many of you guys have ever had that happen? Everybody's had it happen. Well, it might not be your scent. It really could be, like I was talking about earlier. Because when you understand the wavelengths of how a deer's vision is, the University of Georgia did an extensive study on this, it really could be you've got UV dyes and brighteners in your camo. So you've got to check it. You can get a black light, go in your garage, put it 2 or 3 feet away, and if it's glowing blue, you've got brighteners showing through. And that's why that doe all of a sudden would look up and go, wait a second, that color doesn't belong out here. Because again, it's showing up in a shade of blue, and everything else in her world is looking like yellowish or brown. Anyhow. There's all my knowledge right there. So I want to kind of turn a corner here. So we were talking about, you know, things that aren't good for you, right? For whitetails, you know, things that can kill you. And Don, one of the things I know about you is you love your country. Who was I just talking to? I ended up picking up a coaching client here just in the last couple of weeks. I'd mentioned about doing coaching on the podcast, and a gentleman called me and he said he listens to your podcast all the time. And he's a patriot, too. And we got into a great conversation. And I said, you know, Don said something to me one time, which I will never forget. And he said, my integrity isn't for sale. That spoke volumes to me, because we have to look at ourselves in the mirror, right? We have to be happy with who we are. We just saw yesterday, you know, another possible assassination attempt, you know, going on. And I know I kind of open up a can of worms when I'm talking to you about this stuff, and I think a lot of your listeners know that too. But the one thing that I do believe is they're listening to you because you don't compromise. You call them as, like we were just talking about, cover scents. Sometimes there's a lot of smoke and mirrors. And right now, I love my country. I love whitetail hunting. I love my freedom to bear arms, all those different things that I have. But I am, my wife was texting me today, Stacy. And by the way, just we've been praying for your daughter, and I'd love to get an update on that sometime here and kind of hear what's happening. But she's been messaging me, and I was going through my phone even at lunch today, and she's like, babe, I'm really sad and I'm really scared. And I said, you know, what's it about? She says, it's this whole political climate. She goes, I'm scared for our kids. I'm scared for our country, what that might mean, not just for the economy, but for our freedoms and things like, you know, the unborn. I mean, there's so many things. I wrote a song years ago for Sandy Patty. It was called Masterpiece. And I wrote the song in such a way that it wouldn't point a finger at something like abortion, but it would paint such a beautiful picture of life that people might choose life. And what we are seeing happen to the fabric of this country, you're very outspoken, and I know you're holding back.
Yeah. You know, in recent years, I've tried to get better at looking at things from God's perspective. And a good example was just today. I went and took my wife to lunch. It's actually our 35th anniversary today. And she's helping a friend and who's got some health issues at her business. So I went and picked my wife up for lunch. And, you know, there's a couple of apartment buildings in this local town that are now housing Haitian immigrants. And the town is just, it's not what it once was. And we were talking about that. And I said, yeah, but you know, those are God's children too. And I haven't always done this the best, but I try to balance my thoughts and my opinions with God's word. And, you know, you and I both take part in the Sunday night prayer time on Chasing Giants, where, you know, every week one of us gives a little message at the end. And I'm due up November. It's due November 1st. Mine will come out the Sunday right before Election Day. And so obviously we know what I'm going to be talking about. And I struggle, you know, if I had to compare myself to a Bible character, it would be Peter, because, you know, Peter had the faith. He was the guy that got out of the boat and started walking on water. He was more, I think his faith was a little stronger than the rest of them, but he was also the guy that took the sword and
the anger issues,
guard's ear.
Right.
And he's willing to fight for what, you know, and Jesus obviously healed the guard's ear, or the Roman soldier's ear. And I've really had to do some real soul searching here in recent weeks and months, because I never set out to be someone that others looked up to. You know, I shared last year at this event you're going to be speaking at in a couple of weeks. I was the speaker last year. And, you know, I shared in that message, I was, as a kid, I was the kid that got picked on all the time. I was not like anyone that was looked up to. I was the guy looked down upon. And I went like from being the lowest in people's eyes to now I'm the one people are looking up to. And that transition has, I've not really embraced it as well as I could have. And, you know, anybody that's followed me on social media has probably seen me rip into people. And it all stems back to when I was younger. And I remember being picked on as a kid. And finally, at one point, after I was out of school and everything, it was like, you know what? I'm not taking anybody's crap anymore. I got a chip on my shoulder at some point, and I just decided I wasn't going to take anybody's garbage. And then people started looking up to me, but I still had that chip on my shoulder that, you know, I needed to get that removed. And I'm way better today than I was even 2 or 3 years ago. But when it comes to this country, it's so frustrating to me because it's so obvious that what we're seeing is good versus evil.
Yeah.
And I know good people that I like that are absolutely staunchly on the opposite side of the spectrum politically than I am. And I guess that's probably helped soften me just a little bit to the other side. Because again, I know those are God's children just as much as us conservatives are, but it's really frustrating for me to see Christians especially embrace things like a political party that supports abortion. It bothers me to see our true views be skewed 180 degrees from what they truly are.
Yep.
And it's hard for me to accept that I've got people looking up to me because for so long I didn't. And yet now I've got a platform, and it would be so easy for me to be like Peter and just go around with my sword and start chopping people's ears off, you know, with both hands. And I hope I've turned a corner. I'm going to put a lot of effort into that message that I'm going to give right before the election there, that weekend in November. And, you know, the Bible tells us God puts leaders in place, and they've got to be there for his word to be fulfilled. You know, this earth crucified Jesus, and God knew that was going to happen. When he sent baby Jesus, he knew that the day would come when he would be crucified. And we know how the story ends. You know, if we've read Revelation, we know how the story ends. But for us to get to the end of the story, a lot of bad things have to happen. And, you know, I'm not sure where we're at in that story, but I know where we're headed. And you and I both know that we've read the book. We know where the end is. And boy, it's been hard for me to stick my sword back in the sheath and just leave it all in God's hands and let, you know, just try to be the best, use my platform the best I can to show love to everyone, even if they shoot a crossbow. And, you know, everybody wants to think I'm anti-crossbow, you know, and that's not the case at all. If they knew my whole opinion on that. But I've tried to soften my stance on some things to show love to those, to everyone, to folks I typically probably wouldn't have a few years ago. Because the more this country goes down the toilet, the more obvious it becomes to me that we're going to see Revelation playing out if we're not already. And, you know, if I'm going to make a difference, I can't be making a difference by alienating a people. I've got to show love even to those I vehemently disagree with. The whole abortion thing just is enough to just make me beat my head on the wall. And that's just one issue. I mean, I think that's one of the most important issues, no doubt about it, that we face today. The whole immigration thing, you know, do we need a secure border? Yeah, we probably do. But these people coming in, they never had the chance that you and I did in our lives. I mean, we've been so blessed to be born and raised and live our adult lives in this country. And yeah, there's plenty of bad people coming across the border, criminals, thugs, whatever. But there's also a lot of innocent people that are doing nothing but trying to improve their life or the life of their kids. And they're God's children too. And if I'm going to make a difference, I'm going to have to soften up a little bit. And that's something it's really only hit me in recent months. And for me to recognize that I've got a platform that people do pay attention to what I say. Yeah. I can't be going around chopping people's ears off anymore.
It's tough because being in ministry, like I have been for years, you do have people that are looking to you for direction, for answers, for comfort, you know, truth, all that stuff. And, you know, people have said to me, why don't you get more political? Because you can be speaking to so many people. And they say, well, was Jesus political? Well, yeah, to a point he was. Absolutely he was. The way he treated the Pharisees. I mean, he went right in and, you know, you brood of vipers. And he, you know, the money changers, all the different things we see. I'm not Jesus. And I do believe the truth is what really is what sets people free. And so I've tried to walk this, and it's a delicate line, because do I burn inside with anger sometimes when I see things that are not okay, that are hurting our country? You better believe I do, and I talk about them in my home. But talking about them out there, you know, I really kind of have to come back and say, okay, here's what I know to be true. There are people that are coming into this country that have never had the opportunity, and the Bible tells us to feed and clothe and nurture all these different things. Absolutely. But we also do have some that are rapists and murderers and thieves and different things that are coming in, terrorist cells, possibly all these things we're beginning to see. I was in Vegas doing the SHOT Show last year, and I had a black gentleman in my booth that morning who was an electrician, and he started to just talk to me. He said, this whole immigration thing is killing my community because they're coming in and taking a lot of the jobs, and now how am I going to be feeding my family? So there's two sides to the coin. You still care, but we still have to have laws and rules that we have to obey, or a lot more people suffer. When you see the drugs coming across and killing, was it fentanyl? I think now is like the number one kill of people under the age of, was it 35 or something? And so how do we balance all this? You know, loving people like Jesus loved them, but saying, you know, we still have to have these things in place. And I'm a very compassionate person. I think most people know that. Like last week when God said, do this, I really do care about, and you guys are listening to this, really. There's a saying that says, when you make a withdrawal in a relationship, like a bank account, you make a withdrawal, the account goes down. It takes about 5 deposits to build that relationship or that bank account back up again. If it's a big withdrawal, it takes about 5 deposits to get you back where you were. The same thing can happen in relationships. When we break trust with someone, because maybe we've lied 20 years ago, I told a lie, and that thing still haunts me to this day. And there was consequences for my lie back then. So I know the power of telling the truth. No matter what it is, there's nothing better than, because you take the stress off yourself or whatever. But when I am looking at this election coming up, absolutely, I see so many on one side that care so much about social issues, so did Jesus. I see so many that are, you know, they're caring about, you know, working hard and being rewarded for working hard. Well, you can take that right out of Proverbs. I mean, there's so many principles on both sides. For me, this election became very difficult. I shouldn't say it was difficult because of my beliefs. I know where I stand. But it muddied the waters when you had, and this is no secret, it's out there now, we have a president who has been declining mentally for some time. We saw it. But when it was covered up by his own party, when it was covered up by his family, when it was covered up by the vice president, and this is the man who has the nuclear codes, that's where things changed in me. And that's when I finally said, you know what? I mean, I please vote how you believe. I get all that. But when you break trust and you put, you know, how many people do we have, 330 million or whatever in this country, you and the whole world, you put us at risk with nuclear codes, something like that. At that point, trust was broken in a big way. And I haven't seen the deposits put back to try to rebuild that trust. That's what I'm watching for. You know, we're supposed to humble ourselves and take it before God. But I would love to hear more out of some of these platforms about God, to be honest with you, because I believe that we have lost our way. And I think that men need to revive courage. We need to be willing to step up, not like you said, not like Peter going and cutting somebody's ear off, not cutting them down with comments, name-calling, that kind of stuff, but saying, here's the truth, and this is where I stand. And you don't have to like me. That's okay. But I am standing with the one who made everything there is, who called me until the day I die. I'm going to stand for truth. And I think you and I have, you know, my platform is a little obviously different than yours, but you are speaking to literally millions of people, and they are watching you. And you are prayed for so much. And the listeners that are out there listening to this, you can hear his heart. You can hear how much he loves his country and family. And keep him in your prayers, because what the enemy loves to do is when someone gets a platform like that, they will look for anything. The enemy will just take anything he can and try to knock you down. I remember one time, Don, I'm not going to break confidence, but one time you messaged me one time and you said, you know, you ever struggle with, you know, when people say bad things about you? Do you remember that? Like you had said something to me and I was like, yeah, but here's the beautiful thing. It's going to happen because you love Jesus and you're trying to live his truth. When you are persecuted for his name's sake, you're on the right path. So wield that sword carefully, friends. Okay. So let's just kind of wrap this. It's up here. We've been going for a while, but we've got an event. You called me, I don't know how long ago it's been now, maybe 3 months ago. And, you know, what's your schedule like, Brent? Do you ever do men's retreats? And I said, I would rather do a men's retreat. I love game dinners. I love speaking for men's conferences, churches, all that stuff. I said, there's nothing I love more than speaking to a group of men. Because when you can get a man in there and you can help him understand his one true identity, that he has a purpose, and to teach him how to untangle the lies that the enemy has been holding him back with, and this is where the unleashed men came from, is he's now been unleashed to go out and do amazing things, because it doesn't matter what anybody says or thinks about you anymore. You've been given a purpose, and you're trusting in the one who made you. Well, he's the one I answer to. And, man, when you see guys get on fire for this stuff. So I'm going to ask you here in just a second, if you would, Don, tell us a little bit about the retreat. But I want to say to the guys listening to this right now, you guys will take a road trip, right? You can be 10 days out. Somebody goes, hey, you want to go elk hunting? We're going to go out real quick. We got a hotel, a couple hotels. We're going to make the drive out there. You'll drop $2,000 and do that in a heartbeat, easily $2,000. But what about when you could come together with a group of guys who love hunting, who love the outdoors, who want to know God, who want to know their purpose, that want to be engaged in this resistance that we talk about of truth and following God? Don, tell us what's coming up.
Yeah, so my church, you know, every September we have a men's retreat, and we go to a camping area out on Lake Shelbyville. Lake Shelbyville is a big Army Corps of Engineers reservoir, 11,000 acres, all public land around that lake. But there's a private property right next to there that we're allowed to come in for the weekend. There's a building there that, you know, we'll have a feed on Friday evening. We always have a ribeye supper on Friday evening with all the fixings. Have a big campfire, you know, right there. And some people will bring their campers. If you guys want to bring a camper, you're more than welcome. Some people pitch tents. You don't even have to stay overnight if you don't want. You can just come for that one evening. There's motels not that far away if you prefer that. But, you know, you can make a weekend out of it. And then on Saturday morning, we have a big breakfast and then another message around the campfire. And for the rest of the day, you can do what you want. You can bring your boat and go fishing. There's literally a boat ramp about a quarter mile into that lake from where we have the event. So, I mean, you're going to be right there by the lake.
Giving away a Matthews bow, too.
Yeah, we got a lot of door prizes. I'm giving away my Matthews bow from last year, my lift. Last year we had guys from, I think, seven different states that came to this event. And a gentleman from Pennsylvania won my bow a year ago. So I give my bow away as part of this. And there'll be a lot of other door prizes. But, you know, we've just started really building on this the last couple of years. And they asked me to speak last year, and then that they was asking me because of my contacts within the hunting industry to come up with a speaker for this year. And you was at the top of my list. I've been wanting to get you to our church for some time. And so you was the first one I reached out to, but I think the message is going to be great. I'm anxious to hear what you have to say. I mean, I've read your books. I've listened to your podcast, but and of course we've met in person numerous times. But I've never really heard you do a presentation to a group before. So I'm looking forward to it as much as anybody. And
me too.
You're even going to give the message at church on Sunday morning. So
yeah, there are two services, right?
Yeah. There's a, 9 o'clock and 11 o'clock service.
I got a buddy that's in the industry, and he listens to your podcast. He's coming up. He couldn't make it to the retreat. He has a bow shop. He makes strings and stuff. So it's going to be busy, but he's coming up Sunday.
Well, that'd be awesome. So, yeah, hopefully some guys will come to the church service. They did last year. And shoot, after church, we'll go out for pizza or something, and then we'll send you back to Indiana. And
well, let me tell the guys a little bit. They're going, you know, is this going to be like some theological talk? You know, I really am not. This is hunting season coming in, right? Give me something to wake me up. That's what I do. I love, if you listen to my podcast, Lions and Tigers and Bears, oh my, kind of a thing. But every crazy story ties back in with scripture. And I think that's how we remember things. We remember stories. And so when you can take principles and scriptures and tie them in with stuff like that, guys, it's going to be awesome. Literally, you'll be on the edge of your seat a lot of the weekend, but you're going to walk away with so many aha moments. I promise you. I've done these thousands of times. I know the power of God's word when you do it through the door of adventure. So anyhow.
One of the reasons we time this in September is because, you know, our bow season here in Illinois opens October 1st. And we want to give guys, you know, we sit in our tree stands waiting for deer to show up. We've got hours and hours every fall to think. And we want to give guys food for thought and give them plenty to think about while they're sitting in their tree stand this fall.
Do you have a phone number for, like, and the name to contact on that?
Yeah, you're going to want to call Curtis. And Curtis's number is 217-254. I'm waiting for it to scroll across the bottom of the screen here.
1409.
And
BR549.
Just, you know, we need that just so we have enough food. I want to make sure nobody goes home hungry.
Well, guys, I'm telling you, get your buddies. I know it sounds last minute. You guys need to come out to this. It's going to be awesome. That band of brothers that we're going to have there and going through this stuff, it's going to create brotherhood you're going to have for the rest of your life. I know that to be true. Okay. Well, listen, we've been on here for a long time, and I know that our listening audience, maybe they're driving to work and they got a 20 minutes, and this is like four times they're going to have to tune this thing in. But here's what I know to be true, and I say this so many times, and I want you to think about this, because this is where we're headed on that retreat weekend. Identity, identity, identity. There's no three words that I could put together that can be any more powerful than that. And you know where I'm headed with this, because when a man knows who he is in Christ, that he's been created in the image of the living God, when he is no longer held captive by the opinions of others or cares whether he lives or dies, that man is now extremely dangerous. Dangerous for good, because he's been unleashed. Guys, thanks for being with us today. Don, man, it's, I can't wait to have a chance to just hang out and just be. Yeah, it's going to be good.
I hope we have a great crowd, but I'm looking forward to it, no matter what size the crowd is.
Yeah, it's going to be good. All right, guys, hope to see you there, and we will see you next time. Thanks for being with us today, and again, see you next time.